Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since the sea. And you're listening to the Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to Rob Ward, Clinical Services Director at Amicus UK. We'll be talking about breast cancer in men and women. Rob, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show. Always appreciate it. Rob, I think it would be great for you to tell us a bit about your background and, you know, how you got to where you are today.
Okay, yeah, no problem. So I trained as a therapy radiographer in the early 2000s. Prior to that, I was working in industry and felt unfulfilled. So I went into therapy radiography and I worked at Derby and then moved into Sheffield. And took over a role here where I'm currently working in the Gamma Knife suite as it just opened. So it's kind of, and I'm sure we'll discuss it later, but it's specialist type of radiotherapy. After that, I spent some time working with diagnostic teams at a management level. And then I moved back to a similar role, but a bigger role back in the radiosurgery center here at Sheffield.
Brilliant. So loads of experience.
I've moved around a little. Yeah.
What made you, before you went, what was it that motivated you to go into this area? Because it sounds like you could have gone to many different areas.
It's the people contact, really. So, like I say, I was working in industry. It was quite just me sat at a desk doing a day job. Interactions with people around me, but not kind of in-depth interactions. So it was more that person focus. Dealing with people and looking after people, I suppose, to a certain extent, the care aspect of everything, which I felt I was missing, and I felt and I definitely do feel comes with this role, and that's definitely one of the plus sides to radiotherapy and, you know, radiography in general, is there's a lot of people interaction that comes along.
Absolutely. Because you feel more, you can hear more what's going on, isn't it, directly with the person themselves, rather than if you're more senior management, it's difficult, isn't it, because you're hearing from other people, but you're not in direct contact. And you really feel, I think people feel that they're making a difference when they're actually talking to the people that are one-to-one directly firsthand involved. Would that be right?
Yeah, absolutely. You're kind of at the rock face, as it were. So you get to see people and speak to people directly. You're not hearing things third hand. You're not dealing with people who are dealing with people. You're directly there. And definitely from that point of view, from a patient point of view, you build up that experience so you can relate to them a lot better because you've had those similar experiences with other people that have gone along the way. You've had patients that have similar kind of issues or anxieties or problems, and you can build up that rapport with them, and you have a little bit of a skill set to work on when you're speaking to them.
Oh, I get you. Have you had opportunities where you could have moved up higher in the hierarchy, but you actually decided, actually, I want to stay at a point where I'm more in direct contact with people?
Yeah, my previous role was management. So I was looking after the people, so I've moved into more, although it's still a management role, I've moved into more of a role where I have that clinical interaction because that was kind of why I looked to come into this kind of role to begin with. And that's what I was missing in previous roles. So I've gone back to work with patients directly.
Fantastic. Tell us a little bit more about your role at Amicus Radiotherapy UK and, you know, the work you do there.
So it's a radio surgery centre, specifically using Gamma Knife. So we do therapeutic treatments using radiation specifically to the head itself. My role within that is the clinical services manager. So I'm looking after the run of the day, making sure everybody's in the right place at the right time, making sure the team are happy, making sure the patients are happy, making sure that all those kind of roles are fulfilled on a day-to-day basis. That's kind of the clinical part of the title, is making sure that the whole process of the day runs and the whole process of the week runs satisfactorily. And then beyond that, it's filling in any problems that have gone along the way, future planning, making sure if any issues are on the horizon that we're dealing with those, that we're looking to do the best care possible for the patient on a daily basis, essentially. Wherever possible, if we do have issues, we try and solve those behind the curtain, as it were, to make sure that the patient doesn't need to see anything that's going to affect their travel through the system, and they just feel the best care has come forward for them and been presented to them.
Absolutely, because it sounds like there's a lot of day-to-day pressure, like things are constantly changing throughout the day. Would that be right?
Yes, so because aside from standard radiotherapy, where you see a patient for a short period over a number of weeks, we see the patient and do the treatment all in one session. So it's all done in one day with the majority of cases. So essentially everything has to be perfect as each stage, as we go along the day. It can be a long day, and things are changing throughout the day. So patients have to be in certain areas at certain times. We need to make sure that everything is planned and justified and seen by the clinician that's looking after them before we proceed with anything. And we need to make sure that the patient's happy, they understand the process, they understand what they're consenting to, and they understand the treatment before we actually start that process. So it's a lot of care of the patient day to day. There's a lot of technicalities in the background going alongside that. And we just need to make that, as smooth as possible for everybody that's going through that, because any treatment, anybody going into hospital, there's anxieties, there's fears, there's unknowns. And especially with a treatment such as this, where it's not your run of the mill, you may not know a family member that's been through it. You may not have seen anything on the TV or, on the internet about it. So there's a lot of gaps that we have to kind of fill in. And that's the primary part of the first part of the day, is just to make sure everybody understands what's going on, everybody understands what we do. And we can put that into the best format for understanding for the patient as possible, and make sure that everybody is on board with what's happening, especially when they come to us from a cancer point of view. So there's a lot of fears that come alongside that already. They may have just got a recent diagnosis. They may have been through the process.
Hi there, Rob. Sorry, we had some technical issues. So I think you were just explaining how you keep things smooth as you can during the day, because you want to keep away what's going on organizational wise from patients, because of just to manage their anxieties, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. So it's a question of basically tailoring the care to the patient, making sure that all their kind of wants and needs are met. And we have a basic pattern of a working day that we work to, just to keep everybody on board, make sure everybody's keyed into what should happen next. And we make sure that the patient's kind of communicated to and kept well within the loop of everything. So everybody's kind of aware what's going on, patient's aware what's going on. And we just provide the best care possible with a well-oiled team to keep everything running along.
Absolutely. I have experience with hospital services, so I firsthand have a very good understanding over the challenges in terms of generally on the wards. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of things happening, so I think it's brilliant how you try your best to keep things away from the people, because you must see a lot of people, their mental well-being wise, they're probably feeling down. They've just found out possibly about a diagnosis, or they're trying to manage the situation. I'm sure you must see that on a day-to-day basis, you know?
Yes, yeah, definitely. So you get people in all different states as they come through. They may be a long way down the pathway from diagnosis, but this is a new thing all the way for them. You may see people that return. And even with people that return to you and have been through the process before, it's still a shock that they're back with you. Obviously, ideally, people kind of see you once, like an operation. You've been in, you've had something done, you go away, and that's kind of life carries on. And that's not always the case with some of the patients. So, yeah, we do see people again, and we try and allay their fears, because even though they may be aware of the day-to-day process, they'd be aware of what we're actually doing. It's being back with us, and it's that kind of unsettling and anxiety of having to be back with the team and having to have the same procedure done again. So we just try our best, provide the best care we can, and allay those fears as best as we can. Sometimes we're just a listening ear to them. The best thing we can offer is for them to relay how they're feeling, maybe even not even cover that much. Maybe it's a question of just letting them chat about anything and everything, just so they feel a bit more involved, and I feel at least listened to, and there's a bit of empathy there between yourself and the patient to help things along.
Absolutely. Following on from Breast Cancer Awareness Month, lots of people don't know about male breast cancer as it's rare, but is it a reality for many people?
It's not a reality for many people. It is rare. You're talking about 1% of all breast cancer cases within the UK. It is a possibility. But yes, 1%. So you're talking about 400 gentlemen will get cancer, breast cancer on a yearly basis, whereas for females, you're talking about 55,000, something, numbers along those lines. So you're talking less than 1%, but the risk is real for some people, as possible.
No, of course. What are the signs that men can look out for when it comes to breast cancer?
So breast cancer is very similar in both males and females. So you're looking for, if you do notice anything, tends to be, and it's very good that this is kind of relayed in a lot of different ways. Breast cancer awareness for females is obviously really well covered, and it's a very similar concept for men. So you're looking for a lump, probably just on one side. It's probably going to be painless. It may feel hard. It will probably feel irregular. Not a perfect sphere, and then you may feel you may have a rash, some swelling of the skin. There may be some discharge from a nipple. Possibility there's also some raised nodes in either the collarbone or underneath the arm as well. These are all kind of symptoms of breast cancer itself.
Do those symptoms also affect other things going on, like, for example, sleep or day-to-day activities? Yeah. Mental well-being?
Absolutely, yeah. There's kind of generalized symptoms that you may have with cancer. So you may have night sweating, you may feel generally kind of tired overall, you may have problems with kind of itching or yellowness that can affect if you've got some kind of jaundice or similar that goes along. General kind of rundown, non-specific feeling, may have pain in the bones itself, may feel that. So you do have to keep an eye on these kind of non-specific symptoms, because they're kind of warning signs for the body. Like I say, they are non-specific. It's not an absolute by any means that you might have, cancer or something terrible wrong with you, but they're always worth kind of picking up on and having a chat to a medical specialist if you've got a combination of things that are adding up.
Yeah, no, of course. Can you and ladies wise, but is there, I suppose the question is, I know there's similar symptoms between men and women, but are there any actual differences in terms of symptoms between men and women? Are there some things that men might get that women won't, or vice versa? Or are they identical, basically?
They're very, very similar. I suppose the key thing between kind of the sexes is there's a chance men are less familiar with their bodies. That's a kind of overall, I think, for anything else. And like I say, that ties in with the breast cancer awareness and things like that. Women are a lot more comfortable with kind of checking for these things. They're a lot more aware of checking for these things. So although the symptoms may be very similar, it may be that a gentleman noticed something in his chest and he thinks, oh, I've just been, working out a bit more. I've never noticed that kind of thing before. But it's probably not a worry kind of thing. Whereas I think from a female point of view, because it's so well publicized and so well talked about, although it's the same symptom, I think it's quite more likely that a woman would pick up and think, that's not right, I'm going to chat to the GP kind of thing. So although there are very much similarities between the two, I think the handling by each sex in general, obviously some people are better than others, but the handling can be key to spotting these things early and getting the right treatment.
Absolutely. Do the men talk to you about the experiences of the symptoms and everything like that, what they go through?
Well, like I say, it's because we're talking kind of 1% or less than 1%. Through my career, I've only bumped into a handful of men that have found breast cancer through because of what I do. I don't always see every case that goes through. Not everybody gets radiotherapy prescribed as their kind of treatment. So obviously you're talking about a group of people and then a group of that's group of people. But yes, usually by the time people reach me, they're a lot more comfortable talking about these things. They're a lot more clued up on what the factors are and what they need to look for. And, you know, they've usually kind of, you kind of find these people become a little bit of experts on the subject, and they kind of relay that to friends and family, and the message gets out a little bit that way as well. But yes, by the time they usually reach a person like myself, they're a lot more kind of keyed up on that, and they're a lot more comfortable talking about that. You know, some of these things, specifically breast cancer in men, not everybody's comfortable talking about it. It's not the kind of thing that you'll chat about with your friend down the pub or anything like that. Unfortunately, it needs to be that push where something, you know, you found something wrong, you've had a diagnosis before you actually kind of open up and feel free to kind of chat about these things and feel comfortable to chat about these things. And I think that's just a symptom of our society as it is at the moment.
No, of course. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So, Rob, tell us about when someone comes to see you for a radiograph, just the scanning and all the rest of it, from the beginning, they walk in and how it goes, basically, how you support them.
Okay, so we do it as a day case. So we'll admit the patient first thing in the morning. We usually start about 7 a.m. They'll come through, we put them out, they get their own room, they get a space for their family member to come along with them as well, so should they need the support. What we tend to do is we'll explain the process of the day to them, make sure they're 100% understand what's going to happen when. We then get them all prepared for the next stage, which is going to be basically a frame fitting. We do the process itself. The main part of the process is done with a stereotactic frame attached to the head. So we do that with a consultant. So we'll chat them through that. We get them prepped for that. They then go through to the room to have the frame fitted. That's done under local anaesthetic. So similar to kind of a dental procedure, just a local anaesthetic fitting. That frame goes on and is attached to the skull itself. That goes on for about 10 minutes or so until that's in place. Once that's in place, what we do is we get the patient then scanned with an MRI scan. So the difference between this and a standard radiotherapy is that whereas standard radiotherapy, you'll have a scan done, say a week, 2 weeks beforehand, and then you'll have some planning done, and then you'll have the treatment done. We do that all in one sitting. So the patient will have a scan straight away. And that means that we've got the most up-to-date pictures ready for the plan. So they'll have the scan with that frame in place. We'll then bring them back to their room, check it's okay, give them, you know, food and drink with an early start and topped up from that point of view. And then what happens, again, talking about that background, things that they don't, you know, need to worry and think about too much, is that scan is then presented to our physicist, and the physicist will develop a plan based upon that scan for the treatment that needs to be done. So that bit is ties in with a lot of different specialists and a lot of different specialist doctors as well, consultant doctors. So we have a plan defined by a physicist, who's assisted by a radiologist. So that's a doctor that specializes in imaging, to make sure that we're treating everything in the right area. We've identified any kind of, we call them organs at risk, but obviously with the head, they're not organs as such in many cases, but we make sure that if we're close to, say, anything that will affect vision or hearing or motion, we make sure they're accounted for. We try and spare those as best as possible. When we've got a plan done, we get the consultant to make sure that they're happy with it. This is a consultant neurosurgeon in our case. Some centres will have an oncologist, depending on the case that comes through. It's just so happens in Sheffield, it tends to be run as a neurosurgery process. So once a neurosurgeon's happy, everything gets signed off. We'll have a chat to the patient, explain what the course of the next course of the day will happen, how long the treatment's going to be, because that treatment invariably is different per case. And it's going to be different for depending on what we're treating and how much dose it's going to be given. So we explain what's going to happen next, make sure they're, again, understanding what's going on, see if they need a bit of a comfort break before we start the process. And then we bring them through to the actual treatment room itself, chat them through the procedure again, get them comfortable. We have basically the treatment's done as a lying down with the frame that we fitted attached to the couch. So we get them as comfortable as possible in that position. We do another quick check with another scan, and providing they're happy, everything looks good, then we proceed with the actual treatment itself. Treatment, because it's using radiation, there's nothing to see or feel. The machine's particularly quiet. Radiation itself, you don't feel anything when we're given that treatment. So usually we just get the patient comfortable in a comfy spot. If they want to listen to some music, we pipe through that music. If they want peace and quiet, we give them peace and quiet. And then we start the treatment itself.
It sounds like quite a seamless, the way you did it was brilliant, by the way. He just explained everything like, and it sounds like quite a seamless service, like all done together in one go. Is that right?
Yeah. So we do it all in one session. There are a few where we split them into different sessions, but that's dependent upon the patient. And if we need to take care with what we're treating, there's certain parts of the brain where you need to be careful with dose and things like that. Or there's something, if we're treating something that's particularly a large area or a lot of areas, we'll split that over a couple of days, more for the comfort of the patient than anything else. So we'll do that. But invariably, most treatments are done within one sitting. So it needs to be seamless to make sure that all the people are in the right place at one time. And obviously, as I mentioned, a few of those are consultants, which obviously have work elsewhere or maybe running separate clinics or things like that. So we just need to make sure that everybody's ready to roll on the day and that everything's kind of, one after the other, that works in a nice order to make sure that the patient, basically, we want them to be with us as least amount of time as possible, if that makes sense. We would love to have them. We don't kick them out the door by any means, but we understand that they've got their lives to lead, and we understand that this is a step in the process of their day, a step in their pathway. So we don't want to keep them too long. We just want to get them sorted, treated, comfortable, and then allow them to kind of go home and not have to worry about the day and move on to the next step of their journey, really.
Absolutely. And I'm guessing also the other thing is yourselves have probably got quite a list and, you know, a number of people that you need to see as well. So time is a lot of pressure, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So basically we work alongside the trust within Sheffield. So we both work with the same patient list that comes through. We tend to invariably work with the more urgent cases that go through their treatment processes and their MDT processes, which is where MDT is where all cases are discussed between doctors to make sure that they've all agreed that the best treatment pathway that's been decided is the best one with input from an oncologist and all the specialists throughout the team. We tend to work with the more urgent cases, which means we tend to get more kind of brain metastasis cases. This is when cancer spread to the brain itself from elsewhere in the body. Usually we like to turn those around as fast as possible. Obviously the government guidelines are to turn around the treatment as soon as possible for the best outcomes, really. So yes, there's a list of people coming through. There's always a list of people being diagnosed, people having scans where things are found that weren't expected, and then we get to those people as soon as possible to, as I say, treatment as soon as possible is the best thing you can do with any of these things. Going back to like we said with the male breast cancer, if there's anything not quite right, you get that looked at. If there's anything seen on a scan that needs looking at, you get the patient treated as soon as you can.
Absolutely. Is the patient or person awake usually during any of this process or under anesthetic or...
Sorry, I lost you a little bit.
Oh,
there.
Sorry. I'll repeat the question. Is the patient throughout the process under anaesthetic or are they awake or?
They're fully awake. It can be done as a general anaesthetic procedure. That tends to be reserved for children and people that have other conditions that might make sitting still and maybe the stresses of the day and the anxieties of the day will be a struggle for them. We do, in our centre, we don't do children. We just do adult patients as day cases. So we just use local anaesthetic. So local anaesthetic, and that's just for the frame fitting. Other than that, the patient's awake, alert, able to, you know, eat and drink, chat away. Like I say, they can bring family members along to keep them company. So it's done as seamlessly and as gently as possible as we can. And like I say, everybody's fully alert as we go through everything.
That's fantastic. And is there any prep needed? Like, for example, you did mention about food, but I'll ask the question anyway, in terms of, can people eat and drink before, or is it one of those, the process is one of those ones where the person needs to prep up, they can't eat or drink for a certain amount of time beforehand, or?
No prep needed whatsoever. If anybody's on, some people may be on drugs, you know, either for the condition or just generally, we make sure that they're up to date with those. They bring those along. Other than that, what we tend to do is when we start the day, we keep that light. So we might, offer a drink or so, but nothing more beyond that. Once we've got past the scan process, once we've got past the MRI, then the patient's, you know, fine to eat, have breakfast, have another cup of tea, cold drink, whatever they need. So there's no restrictions from that point of view, and there's no need to starve beforehand. There's no need to take specific drugs beforehand. It's literally done as in the most straightforward way as possible. So little interruption as life as we can do, really.
That's fantastic. It sounds like there's a lot of organization. Is there a system you've got in place, like on your computer databases, or there's someone that's coordinating and that? Because it seems like there's a lot of moving cogs that need to be put together, you know?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. You need good administration for this. You need to make sure, as I say, you need doctors to be in the right place at the right time. You need our team to be in the right place at the right time. You need to work with the scanning team to make sure that they've got the availability at the right time. So, yes, we work with an administrative team to make sure that everything's in place. Everybody who's available is available. If somebody's unavailable, you know, is there a colleague that can take over? Make sure that everything kind of works as best as it can. So there's lots of different cogs, for want of a better word, in the system to make sure everything kind of runs properly.
Absolutely. I'm guessing there must be some contingency measures as well, just in case people are off sick or unpredictable things happen and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We make sure that never run it on a shoestring. You make sure that there's enough people about should somebody fall ill, should there be a problem with, you know, traffic, anything like that, you've got that cover and you can just crack on with the day as soon as you can.
In terms of treatment, there's probably there may be different types of treatment. Is that, I know you've mentioned it a few times. Could you go into a little more detail about some of the treatments that are available?
So, like I say, we offer a treatment from a cancer point of view. We offer treatment for the brain itself. We also, purely from our point of view, we do benign treatments as well with the equipment that we've got to hand. There's a few different diagnoses that are suitable for this kind of treatment, where you can either have surgery or this, or we can back up surgery, you know, post-surgery kind of treatments that come along. If you're generally in the pathway of radiotherapy, we can also offer, not personally here, but there's also linear accelerator treatments. That's a traditional radiotherapy treatment where people will be offered short treatments over a number of days, over a number of weeks for their treatment itself. Lots of different kind of interacting bits that come along, obviously chemotherapy, immunotherapy, and things that have joined the fold. So we work as very much as a part of that system. We're not exclusively, we're not outside of that. We work as a part of, a treatment plan that's offered for a patient to make sure that they get the best care as possible.
Absolutely. We're just going to another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
thank you for that, Rob. Basically, if someone is worried about something, you know, they find something and they're a bit worried, what are the next steps they should take?
Definitely see your GP is the first one. GPs are best placed to do that initial examination. They're well-trained. I know access can sometimes be an issue with a GP, but there's, you know, there's always something you need to look at. If you're worried about it, then get it sorted out. Get somebody to have a look at it. It may be that it's nothing. Maybe that somebody checks it. They say, oh, it's fine. It's perfectly normal. And then your fears are allayed. There's nothing worse than kind of having you stressed and worried about it, but not sharing that kind of information, or feeling too scared to share that information for want of either because it's something slightly embarrassing or because you're scared of what that the answer may be if somebody does, you know, check that out. But first step is definitely get looked at, speak to somebody, and get that answer that you need, or get the next available bit of treatment pathway or step or examination to happen as soon as possible.
Are there any, in terms of health conditions, are there any health conditions out there that share similar symptoms to breast cancer?
They can be, specifically in the male sphere. So you can have not necessarily similar conditions to breast cancer, but you can have gynecomastia, so that's an enlargement of the breast tissue. That can be confused with breast cancer itself, because there is some enlargement of the glands and things like that. So you may mistake that. There's cysts, you may get cysts, and you kind of may take those as to be a lump, because they, you know, they present as a lump in itself. And then other than that, like I say, because there are some presentation factors like puckering in the skin or discharge or anything like that, just basic infections can give very similar appearances to itself. And same goes with the nodes. If you've got a generalized infection, that might involve some raised nodes, which could be totally, you know, non-related to cancer. It's just a general infection being run down, things like that. But again, get these things checked and get an expert to say yes, no. And if extra steps need to be taken, you need an ultrasound scan or similar just to make sure, then those things are best offered. Just to allay your fears, if nothing else.
I was just going to ask that. Is there anything else that happens just to check it out?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So if we use breast cancer as an example, for instance, so you present to the GP, GP checks. They say, yes, there's definitely something that we need to investigate. Then the next steps from that point of view would be a mammogram could be offered. Ultrasound to back up that mammogram. It may be that biopsy is taken, just to make sure. And then with multiple different steps, multiple different scans, histology done as part of the biopsy, then you can get a full answer. Whether that be a positive, that it's just a cyst, it gets drained, it's no problem at all, or whether there's something there that needs further investigation. So there are a few steps along the pathway to get that full answer. But they're all readily available. If you make that trip to the GP, have a chat, those things are all built into the process of the NHS and accessible to all.
I think it's brilliant. And I ask those questions because I've spoken about many different subjects. And I always come across that point where, because the body is very complex, isn't it? It's a really complex thing. And people could get all kinds of symptoms, and it could be possibility of so many different things. So obviously it must be a great relief to someone where they think they've got something which is quite, you know, concerning, but actually it turns out to be something that's, you know, less risk in terms of, you know, long-term consequences. So it's nice to know that, you know, sometimes it might not be as serious as breast cancer. It could be something a lot less in terms of health condition, you know?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think the key takeaway is, you know, not to hammer it home, but if you're worried, get somebody to have a look, get a specialist to have a quick look, pop to the GP and have things checked, because it's not necessarily going to be, the answer you're fearing. It could be something quite straightforward. It could be something quite natural. You know, you've mistaken something that's very natural within the body as something a bit more kind of sinister. So it's definitely worth kind of checking these things out, because not all answers are, you know, negative answers, and it's not all kind of bleak.
What is the benefit of seeking help early? As I know that it can be embarrassing to talk about bodies and illnesses, and maybe more so for men.
Definitely. So specifically with cancer, caught early is a lot more treatable. So if you're catching something early, you're usually catching it so it's localized, which makes treatment options far more simple. You know, it could be something as simple as surgery is the best kind of course of action. It could be something where it needs to be backed up with surgery and maybe radiotherapy or something simple, but something that's quite straightforward. You're looking at one place, you're looking at the original point that the cancer originated at. You're not having to worry about it spreading beyond anywhere else. So there is a risk left longer before you investigate. There is a risk of spread of cancer. So it can spread locally, it can spread to the nodes, as I mentioned, that you might get some raised nodes and things like that. So that's kind of the first line of spread. It was potentially invade nearby tissue. It will also potentially jump into your lymphatic system, which is white blood cells, and that use that as a course to move around the body. Left later than that, you can have something called metastasis. So that's a distant spread. So that's basically your original cancer has spread to a distant part of the body, and it's utilized that white blood cell system. It's utilized the bloodstream to get from A to B. And that's where, when we're doing cancerous treatments, that's where we come in from a metastasis point of view. So we're talking about distant spread from, for instance, the breast, the lung, etc., go into the brain itself. So it's actually kind of settled into the brain itself as a tumor. And then that's where we come in and we can deliver treatment specifically to that tumor and spare the brain tissue around it to make sure that tumor itself is controlled. And then usually if there is spread like that, then there's a question of beyond going from surgery and potentially radiotherapy, you're looking at more systemic treatments. So you're looking at chemotherapies, looking at immunotherapies, maybe some kind of hormone treatments, depending on what the primary cancer may be.
So just to summarize that, early treatment would be, what would be the most first like port of call?
So early treatment, potentially if you've got a tumor, it's nice and localized. There's no sign that it's spread. So potentially it could be surgery. It could just be removing of that tumor itself. That might be a good kind of point of call. It depends on the, you know, the cancer that may present itself. Some cancers are instantly spread around the body, you know, cancers of the blood and cancer of the white blood cells and things like that. Some of those will present with the more general symptoms that I mentioned, like, you know, feeling tired and achy and run down with no specific kind of lumps or bumps or anything to present themselves. But yes, first point of action, usually for many things, maybe surgery. If it's caught nice and early and nice and localized, it can just be a question of removing that tumor. And that's kind of the most treatment that you need in that aspect.
Basically, what happens if people don't look for help and it has spread?
So if when you get spread beyond the original point, when you get spread into the rest of the body, it gets very hard, a lot more harder to control. You may be talking from something like where you've got a tumor and it's been removed and it was very localized. You may be talking that you know, that's treated, it's gone, it's you don't need to worry about it anymore. You may just be talking about yearly checkups or anything just to make sure it's kind of resolved. When you move into disease moving into the rest of the body, it's far harder to actually treat it, keep an eye on it, and it's you going into a likelihood where it's something like a long-term condition, and it's something that needs constant checking to make sure it's not spreading. So it's a lot harder to treat. You're only talking about a handful of cells that are left over from whatever treatment you're having that they could potentially then form another tumor elsewhere. So you're talking about a reduction in potentially a reduction in survival for yourself, statistically speaking, going from that very early point where things can be removed to a later point where you're kind of chasing this disease, unfortunately, around the body. And that's going to obviously, quality of life factor wise, that's going to take your quality of life down quite a way. And it's also going to affect the survival rate for many people.
November's coming up. Why is November so important this year?
So we have Movember as part of the November kind of calendar that happens. That's been going on for quite a few years. I think we're probably 20 odd years into November coming across. I believe it was an Australian concept originally, but basically that's a men's health thing. So as you may guess from the name, it's based upon moustache, the Movember. So they encourage fundraising through moustache growing and very men-based fundraising for those kind of ideas. It covers all of men's health, basically very things that are particularly specific to men, such as prostate cancer, testicular cancer, but it also covers mental health for men and kind of that more positive action for, you know, dealing with people as in a whole object rather than just an organ or anything like that. So it's sometimes, as I mentioned earlier on, sometimes it's a question that men don't want to seek help, or men are very poor at asking for help. And this is gives us more of a push to say it's okay to ask for help and to present men with, you know, the obvious things that may be, you know, they may happen to them because, you know, they've got this particular organ, they've got, you know, prostate, et cetera, that might become affected. So it presents that open opportunity for men to kind of talk about it, find a bit more about it and do something fun along the way with, like I say, fundraising and similar.
And I'm guessing you're taking part because I can see that you've got a moustache that's growing and, you know, in full form. Is that right?
We try and kind of follow as much as we can to celebrate these kind of things that are going along, like the breast cancer awareness, like Movember that's coming through. And we try it as best as we can to kind of at least interact with those as we go through. We're not a large team, so we can't always, you know, make ourselves follow each thing that go on, but wherever possible, we try and at least spread that awareness and kind of join in with the positive approach that these bring.
Any words of wisdom for men or women listening in who have a concern but feel too scared or embarrassed to ask for help?
I think a key thing, as I've mentioned, is just make that approach. If you're worried about something, then there are people out there that can answer that question, you know, that can look at these things. There are things that we consider embarrassing to have, you know, to have to ask for or to have checked. But realistically, these are things, as I mentioned earlier on, if you get things sorted earlier on, it's going to be far better for you. It's going to be far more positive in the long run if you get things sorted out. And that also ties in with, you know, the mental health and things like that. If you start speaking to people, even if from a mental health point of view, even if it's speaking to friends, family and things like that, you start to initiate that process and relieve that kind of pressure and anxiety upon yourself, share that out a little bit, let people, you know, chat to you about their experiences and give their impression of things. And maybe, you know, if it turns out that you do need to go to a doctor, see a doctor, it may be that they'll come along with you. They'll support you through the process. You know, you've got somebody to chat to and talk to. So I think the key thing is sharing. And if you're worried about anything, then, you know, chat to your GP, chat to a doctor. If you've got a nurse living next door, have a word, just see what help there is out there, because there is help out there. And I know it's hard to ask for that help, but it's available. And the advantages we have in the UK is we have a healthcare system in place that's readily available to everybody. So make that step.
Are there any services? I ask this as a general question because I've asked it before in other shows. Is there a service where someone can get some advice, confidentiality over the phone, not having to give their details or anything like that?
There are some services. There are some charities that run something very similar for those kind of things. And groups, there's a lot of kind of the advantage of the online age is there are lots of kind of forums and support groups for that kind of thing. So you can kind of chat about your worries or share experiences and things like that. So there are availabilities of those kind of services.
Brilliant. Will there be any future other charity events coming up?
There's from this point of view, there's always charity events coming through and happening. So we always have kind of awareness for, you know, brain cancers. We have awareness for bowel cancers. They're always on the calendar. You can always kind of keep up with those. The brain one was a few months ago. Obviously, we've got Movember coming up, so that's a generalized men's health one. So keep an eye on the calendar. Keep an eye on Facebook and Instagram and everything like that. There'll be stuff coming on, and there'll be stuff that, in, you know, maybe close to home for you guys. There may be something that, you know, affected you or a family member or a friend that you can then tie into make that something that you represent and you work with.
Brilliant. And for yourself, are you going to remain where you are, or any future plans? Or I'm being nosy now.
Well, I'm recently back to this role, so it's been less than a year that I've been back in working with the team at Thornbury. So at the moment, now we're just seeing how things go. We're getting everything kind of settled and making sure that we're here and supporting the service that's going on. So no, I'll be here for a bit. Yeah,
fantastic, and good to hear it, because it sounds like, you know, you're a real asset to the organization, you know.
Well, it's teamwork, key thing with anything. If anything I've found working elsewhere, things only work as a team. So you have to make sure that the right people are at the right place and the right ethos is there, realistically. And that's not me in any specific stead. That's just making sure that everybody can work together and get things done.
Absolutely. It sounds like you've got a great team.
Yes, really good team. Really good team that work together. We actually cover Amethyst UK itself, has a centre in the centre of London as well. And has a centre up in Sheffield, which is where I'm based. So, and over those, both those teams, we have a great team looking after those, and individually inside those centres, we have great teams that people know what they're doing. People speak and, you know, chat to one another and work as a well-oiled machine. And I think that's what people need. It goes back to what I was saying about, you know, gaps in the process or problems. It's just a question of having the right person, the right place, so they can solve that problem as soon as possible, and then, you know, day goes back to normal and things can progress nicely.
Fantastic. Rob, thank you for your time today. It's been really helpful.
No problem.
And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.